If you're chasing data down instead of seeing it in one place, you need the Intuit ERP. Intuit Enterprise Suite. All your data in one place with built-in AI for real-time insights. Learn more at intuit.com/ERP.
Indeed Sponsored Jobs gets you quality candidates when you need them most. Spend less time searching and more time actually interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. When you need the right person to cut through the chaos, this is a job for Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? This is a job for Indeed Sponsored Jobs.
They say everything happens for a reason, but I suspect everything happens for a reason. Like this commercial break. Did you need 15 seconds away from music? Or 15 seconds to eat a Reese's? Perhaps it's true. Everything happens for a reason.
I started my first business when I was 12, mowing lawns for about $5 a yard. I learned if you do the job right, people trust you and customers care that you show up and do what you say you're going to do. Hi, I'm Tommy Mello, owner of Don's Garage Doors. From garage door repairs to upgrades, we show up, we stand behind every job. We only use the best parts and springs guaranteed to last a lifetime. When you care about the people you serve, you work harder and it shows. Call Don's Garage Doors today or schedule online at donsgaragedoors.com.
When it comes to garage doors, no one knows more.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
On September 14th of 1999, Michael Scott sat in an interrogation room in Austin, Texas. He'd been there for hours. Not 2 hours, not four. This was an 18-hour session stretched across 4 days of questioning. Scott had documented learning disabilities, which meant his ability to process complex, high-pressure situations was already compromised before the first question landed. He had no lawyer. He was being asked about a crime that had happened 8 years earlier, a crime he'd been questioned about as a teenager and released for lack of evidence. After 18 hours... he broke. He signed a detailed confession naming himself, Robert Springsteen, Maurice Pierce, and Forrest Wellborn as participants in the murder of four teenage girls at a yogurt shop. The next day, Springsteen confessed too. During his interrogation, one detective sat blocking the only exit from the room while another screamed questions inches from his face. Springsteen would later tell a jury what he was thinking in that room. If I just make up a bunch of stories and tell them what they want to hear, the evidence will show it couldn't have been me. He was right about the evidence. He was wrong about the system. This is part three of the Yogurt Shop Murder series here on Hidden Killers. We've covered the crime and the botched investigation. Now we're inside the interrogation room, and what happened in there will challenge everything you think you know about confessions, about guilt, about how the system decides who pays for a crime. The interrogation is shockingly like Richard Allen's in Delphi, done by unqualified, in my opinion, dipshits who have no business wearing a badge. Press subscribe as we continue to work our way through this. And give us your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. The links are in the descriptions. The question that every person hearing the story asks is the same one that jurors ask, the judges ask, the families ask. Why would someone confess to something they didn't do? I wouldn't do that. Well, have you ever been in an interrogation room like this? Have you ever been put on the spot in that sort of a way? Not talking your sister-in-law asking you, did you eat the rest of the potato salad? No. I'm talking about being a young, dumb, just out of teenage years person, as we all have been. Young and dumb. I'm not saying these kids are just, we're all there, inexperienced in life, being pressured by people above us who we think have our best interests at heart, who are the authority figures, railroading you in a direction that you know you didn't go. Have you ever been in that situation? That exact situation in an interrogation? If the answer is no, then you don't know what the F you're talking about. If you're going, yeah, I wouldn't do that. I know. I would think that too. This happens all the time with people just like this on the margins, being taken advantage of by people who need to check a box to make it look like they're competent at their jobs when the world knows they are not. And so do they. So they make shit up because they have a badge. It's a question that makes false confession so effective because it sounds like common sense. Surely no one would say that I did it if they didn't, right? Surely the instinct for self-preservation would kick in. Surely the truth would hold. But the research tells a completely different story, and it's a story the criminal justice system has been catastrophically slow to absorb because the bastards with the badge don't like being wrong. Imagine if you took this into consideration, how much more powerful and how much more people would respect the badge and respect your authority if you respected the human beings you're supposedly serving and protecting. I'm not saying this against all cops by any means, because that's the next thing I get. You don't like police? No, I do. I love ethical, moral, well-meaning police officers, law enforcement folks. Those folks are wonderful. Unfortunately, there's a lot of these fuckers. But we need more of those ones, the good ones, to call out the bad ones. Because otherwise everybody gets roped into the same group. And that's not fair. There are great investigators. There are great police officers. There are great detectives. And there are absolute shit ones, too. And those absolute shit ones deserve not only to be removed from the force, they deserve to be prosecuted. They deserve to be put away. Because their line of thinking is so broken and damaged and predatory that there's no telling how many lives they will destroy with or without a badge. Prolonged interrogation doesn't test the truth. It tests endurance. And everybody breaks at a different point, but everybody breaks. The human brain, under sustained pressure, sleep deprivation, psychological manipulation, and the certainty that the people across the table already believe you're guilty, that brain stops thinking about truth and starts thinking about survival. What do I need to say to make this stop? What words will get me out of this room? This person clearly isn't reasonable. And the answers that come out of that desperation are not memories, they're performances. The mechanics of how this works are well documented by researchers. It starts with maximization. The interrogator conveys absolute certainty that the suspect is guilty, that the evidence is overwhelming, that the only question is whether the suspect cooperates or faces the worst possible outcome. Then comes minimization, offers of leniency, suggestions that it was an accident. That you were the suspect, it was just along for the ride. Things will go easier if they just tell the truth. Except the truth the interrogator wants isn't the actual truth. It's the narrative the interrogator has already constructed. And the suspect, exhausted and terrified, starts filling in the blanks of that narrative with whatever details seem to satisfy the room. In Scott and Springsteen's case, there was an additional layer of contamination that made this process even more dangerous. The initial interrogations of these same men back when they were teenagers in 1991 were never recorded. There's no documentation of what detectives said to them, that details or what details were shared, what information was planted during those early sessions. That matters enormously because at the time 1999 rolled around and those interrogations happened, these men had spent 8 years living in a community saturated with details about the case. News coverage, neighborhood gossip, conversations at parties, fragmented, overheard, and half-remembered conversations. The line between what they actually knew and what they'd absorbed from the atmosphere had been obliterated. Memory expert Robert Schummer, who examined the case, documented how suggestible the human mind is under these conditions. People don't just repeat information they've been told. They internalize it. They construct false memories around it. And they can describe those false memories with a level of confidence and detail that is indistinguishable from genuine recollection. That's what the detectives harvested in those interrogation rooms. Not truth, not memory. Contamination. Dressed up as confession. The confessions were inconsistent. They contradicted each other on critical details. They included information that did not match the crime scene. But none of that mattered once the words, "I did it," were on paper. Charges were brought and the system began the process of convicting two men based on nothing but their own coerced statements. Charges against Maurice Pierce were dropped after two separate grand juries refused to indict him. Think about that. Regular citizens reviewing the evidence concluded twice that there was not enough to go forward. Forrest Wellborn's charges were dropped in 2000 for the same reason. The case against them was so weak that the system's own gatekeepers rejected it, but Springsteen and Scott weren't that fortunate. Their confessions existed on paper, and that was enough to proceed. The trials of Robert Springsteen in 2001 and Michael Scott in 2002 were prosecuted with a strategy that was brilliantly cynical and legally catastrophic. The prosecution had no physical evidence, no DNA, no fingerprints, no forensic link of any kind connecting either man to the crime scene. What they had were confessions and photographs. Lead prosecutor Robert Smith stood in front of the jury and told them that Springsteen had cased the yogurt shop earlier in the day, returned with others at night, forced the girls into the back room, and participated in the killings. He described the crimes against the victims in graphic, devastating detail. He showed the jury crime scene photographs that depicted the worst thing most of those people had ever seen. And then he presented the confessions as the final piece. The prosecution didn't need to prove the case with evidence. They needed the jury to be so horrified by the crime that any voice claiming, "I did it," sounded like the answer they'd been waiting for. And it worked. The emotional weight of what happened to those four girls was so enormous that it overwhelmed the absence of physical proof. The jury convicted Robert Springsteen of capital murder and sentenced him to death. Michael Scott was convicted and sentenced to life in prison. Two men, zero evidence, two confessions that contradicted each other and didn't match the forensics. And a death sentence. What the juries didn't know is what makes this even harder to stomach. They didn't know about Hector Polanco's track record. They didn't know that the detective who shaped the early investigation had been found responsible for at least seven false confessions, including one that sent an innocent man to a prison beating that left him with permanent brain damage. They didn't know about the information contamination, how 8 years of community gossip had salted the details of the crime in the general population, making it impossible to distinguish genuine knowledge from ambient absorption. And they didn't have the DNA evidence that would later prove someone else entirely had been in that yogurt shop. They were making decisions with a fraction of the picture, and the fraction they had was carefully curated by prosecutors who needed a conviction more than they needed the truth. But here's where the legal architecture of these convictions reveals something even more disturbing. Springsteen's confession was used as evidence against Scott. Scott's confession was used as evidence against Springsteen. But neither man was allowed to cross-examine the other. That's a direct violation of the Sixth Amendment's confirmation clause, which guarantees every defendant the right to confront the witness against them. The confessions contradicted each other on fundamental details. Who did what, in what order, with what weapon? If the men had been allowed to challenge each other's statements in open court, those contradictions would have been exposed. The jury would have seen two stories that couldn't both be true, told by two men who couldn't keep their fabrications consistent because the stories weren't based on anything that actually happened. But the way the trials were structured, each jury had only heard one side of a story. That didn't hold together when you put both sides next to each other. Seven jurors from those trials later stated publicly that they would not have convicted if they had access to the full picture, including the DNA evidence that would soon emerge. Seven people who participated in the process, who rendered the verdict, who sent a man to death, saying after the fact that the system gave them incomplete information and they would have decided differently. That's not justice failing at the margins. That's justice failing at its core. And the core is exactly where this failure happened. The system didn't just produce a bad result. The system was structurally configured to produce a bad result. When your only evidence is a confession, and the confession was obtained through coercion, and the coercion exploited a suspect's learning disabilities and a community's information contamination, and the trial denied the defendant's constitutional right to confront the evidence against him, at what point is the outcome anything other than predetermined? The machine took in pressure and produced convictions. That's what it was designed to do. Whether the convictions were accurate was a question nobody with power seemed particularly motivated to ask. Robert Springsteen was 17 years old at the time of the crime. He was sentenced to death. In 2005, Governor Rick Perry commuted that sentence to life in prison under Roper v. Simmons, the Supreme Court ruling that banned the execution of individuals who committed crimes as juveniles. Sit with that one for a moment. The state of Texas was prepared to execute the man for a crime he committed as a child, a crime he did not commit at all, based entirely on words that were extracted from him in a room where one detective blocked the door and another screamed in his face. Who should be on death row? I don't think it's him. I think it might be those detectives. If the Supreme Court had ruled differently, or if the timing had been slightly different, Robert Springsteen would be dead. Not because he killed anyone, because he said what he needed to say to survive an interrogation room, and the system decided that was close enough. Michael Scott, who had documented learning disabilities that made him particularly vulnerable to the pressure tactics used against him, was sentenced to life. His confession came after 18 hours of questioning over 4 days. He had a 3-year-old daughter when he was arrested, and his wife had just celebrated their first wedding anniversary. All that was taken from him, the milestones, the birthdays, the school plays, the ordinary texture of a life being lived, because detectives decided that the best way to solve a cold case was to sit a cognitively vulnerable man in a room for 4 days until he gave them what they wanted. 2 convictions, 2 men behind bars, 1 on death row, 0 evidence, and the actual killer, a violent predator who would go on to assault and murder across multiple states, was never on anyone's list. He was out there, still moving, still hurting people, while the system congratulated itself for solving the case. You know, in Texas, they put on their big hats, and then they each other off in front of everyone. We've seen this so many times. Sandy Hook, remember that? Remember when they all were, this is a great, we were all there, like all 300 of you, as one man goes and takes out all those kids. You're just doing a great job. But you all tell each other it's great, right? Because that's how you do things there in Texas. This shit still goes on to this day. If you want it to stop, you got to tell them to stop. You got to stop going along with their bullshit. You got to stop blanketly saying, I support the blue. Well, that's great. How about you support the good ones and reject the shitty ones? Just as we should in every aspect of life. Keep the good people, get rid of the shitty ones. Wearing a badge doesn't give you some sort of magical pass that everything you say is right and true. And because your Aunt Edna shows up at the parades doesn't give you any sort of validity. We need to start calling out the bad ones. Inside departments, the bad ones need to start being called out. The good cops need to start calling out the bad ones. Otherwise, we just have departments that are run by bad ones because the good ones go, I'm not going to be part of this shit show. That's why you have so many corrupt departments, because the good ones leave and the bad ones take over. That's how businesses fail and fall apart, because the good people eventually get outnumbered by the bad people. And the good ones are like, I'm too good for this. This is not, no. It's a cancer. It's an infection. And it happens in every every area of life, including police departments, including churches, because someone's wearing a badge or a cross doesn't make them infallible. Yet there's far too many people out there who are willing to not critically look at anything and go, oh, cross, badge, must be good. Huh. Or the incarnate of evil standing in front of things like that to take advantage of your goodwill and your ignorance. Every press conference, every banner headline, every sigh of relief from a community that thought the nightmare was over. All of it was built on a lie, manufactured in an interrogation room by a piece of shit named Hector Polanco, in my opinion. If this is how justice works, if confessions extracted through exhaustion and fear are treated as proof, if constitutional rights can be sidestepped in service of a conviction, if the standard for sending a man to die is the sound of his voice saying words that someone else put in his mouth, then the question isn't whether the system failed. The question is, what exactly is the system protecting? In part four, the convictions fall apart. DNA proves someone else was in that yogurt shop. The men are released. But the DA tells the press she still believes they're guilty. And for one of the accused, the system's refusal to let go proves fatal. The wreckage is next. Press subscribe so you don't miss it. And if you're just getting into our series here, it's five parts. There's two more in front of this. There's two more to come. Love to get your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. We'll continue our conversation there. Until then, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
They say everything happens for a reason, but I suspect everything happens for a reason. Like this commercial break. Did you need 15 seconds away from music? Or 15 seconds to eat a Reese's? Perhaps it's true. Everything happens for a Reese's.
A noisy garage door is a cry for help. Hi, I'm Tommy Mello, owner of Don's Garage Door Service. Most repairs are simple, but if left untreated, they can turn into costly repairs. Your garage door works hard every day, and a little maintenance goes a long way. We fix garage doors fast with quality parts designed to last a lifetime. Over 90,000 five-star reviews don't happen by accident. They happen by putting people first. Fixing your garage doors is what we do. From repairs to upgrades, call Don's Garage Door Service today.
It's said everything happens for a reason, but maybe everything happens for a Reese's. Take noise-canceling headphones. Do they block hearing to heighten taste? That sound seems to show everything happens for a Reese's.
We're hiring at Don's Garage Doors. No experience, no problem. We provide full training, a brand new van, top-of-the-line tools, a gas card, and steady jobs with weekly pay. This isn't just a job. It's a career with real growth, great pay, and job security. Our team members go from training to six figures, and we're ready to help you do the same. Don't wait. Apply now at donsgaragedoors.com.
It's said everything happens for a reason, but maybe everything happens for a Reese's. Take noise-canceling headphones. Do they block hearing to heighten taste? That sound seems to show everything happens for a Reese's.
A noisy garage door is a cry for help. Hi, I'm Tommy Mello, owner of Don's Garage Door Service. Most repairs are simple, but if left untreated, they can turn into costly repairs. Your garage door works hard every day, and a little maintenance goes a long way. We fix garage doors fast with quality parts designed to last a lifetime. Over 90,000 five-star reviews don't happen by accident. They happen by putting people first. Fixing your garage doors is what we do. From repairs to upgrades, call Don's Garage Door Service today.
It's said everything happens for a reason, but maybe everything happens for a Reese's. Take noise-canceling headphones. Do they block hearing to heighten taste? That sound seems to show everything happens for a Reese's.
We're hiring at Don's Garage Doors. No experience, no problem. We provide full training, a brand new van, top-of-the-line tools, a gas card, and steady jobs with weekly pay. This isn't just a job. It's a career with real growth, great pay, and job security. Our team members go from training to six figures, and we're ready to help you do the same. Don't wait. Apply now at donsgaragedoors.com.
They say everything happens for a reason, but I suspect everything happens for a reason. Like this commercial break. Did you need 15 seconds away from music? Or 15 seconds to eat a Reese's? Perhaps it's true. Everything happens for a Reese's.
A noisy garage door is a cry for help. Hi, I'm Tommy Mello, owner of Don's Garage Door Service. Most repairs are simple, but if left untreated, they can turn into costly repairs. Your garage door works hard every day, and a little maintenance goes a long way. We fix garage doors fast with quality parts designed to last a lifetime. Over 90,000 five-star reviews don't happen by accident. They happen by putting people first. Fixing your garage doors is what we do. From repairs to upgrades, call Don's Garage Door Service today.
They say everything happens for a reason, but I suspect everything happens for a Reese's. Like this commercial break. Did you need 15 seconds away from music? Or 15 seconds to eat a Reese's? Perhaps it's true. Everything happens for a Reese's.
A noisy garage door is a cry for help. Hi, I'm Tommy Mello, owner of Don's Garage Door Service. Most repairs are simple, but if left untreated, they can turn into costly repairs. Your garage door works hard every day, and a little maintenance goes a long way. We fix garage doors fast with quality parts designed to last a lifetime. Over 90,000 five-star reviews don't happen by accident. They happen by putting people first. Fixing your garage doors is what we do. From repairs to upgrades, call Don's Garage Door Service today.
What's up, y'all? Summer's got a different tempo. Everything's a little looser, brighter. One plan turns into another. You hear something, you stay a little longer. Next thing you know, you're somewhere you didn't plan to be. It's those in-between moments. That's where the ideas hit. Conversations stretch out, little memories sneak up on you. And sometimes, it's just about what's in your hand. That color, that chill. The new Tropical Butterfly Refresher from Starbucks. Guava and passion fruit flavors with mango pineapple flavored pearls. Yeah, that feels like summer before you even taste it. Funny how one small stop becomes the best part of the day. Start your summer rhythm with Starbucks. Try the new Tropical Butterfly Refresher from Starbucks.
Introducing the all-new Mazda CX-5, featuring more connection.
Hey Google, where's the nearest Pilates class?
Safety that has your back. More discovery on the scenic routes. More passion in the details. And more control in changing weather. The all-new Mazda CX-5. More to move every side of you. See it in 5 films at MazdaUSA.com/5sides.
Google is a trademark of Google LLC. Sequences shortened and simulated.